Today is Thursday, January 25th, 2018. We're going to hear Moshe Soloveitchik Shir and Parshas Bashalach.
The class this evening is sponsored by the Young Israel of Northbrook, and we're happy to have you present. We're honored for Rabbi Soloveitchik to be here and to give us a class, and we appreciate his efforts very much. We'll collect the kumashim after the class, and a couple minutes afterwards we'll daven marav. Please stay to make sure we have a minyan.
No.
No class next week.
I'll be out of town.
I'm included in the email.
I want to start off by discussing, because I see there's some people that were at my shul this evening, and just the discussion that I initiated between Mincha and Ma'ariv. In Parshas, and I want to discuss to a certain degree the significance of what is going on in terms of recognition of Yerushalayim as the capital of Israel by the United States. But first I want to discuss that we see one miracle after another. I discussed in Shul, one miracle after another took place. Even in the early day, this year is being dedicated by Mrs. Alkayim in memory of her father, Meir Zev ben Bel of Yaakov. I see you use the Sephardic approach. Okay. It should be a schus for him for an Elias Neshama. Do you say this today or? We see the Jewish people time and time again. They stand at the Yam, at the sea, and they're all scared. And they're screaming and crying and davening and rebelling all at the same time. Different groups, according to Chazal, there were different groups. There were those apparently having different groups is not a new, not something new among our people. Anyway, probably there were people that were in all the groups. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu splits the sea. They see the Egyptians drowning. They sing the Shira. They sing the song of the Shira. And I've discussed very often the Shira starts off Why sus v'rochva? So I have mentioned because, and the Jewish people are explaining why up till that point they did not sing Shira when they went out of Egypt, according to many Mefarshim. There is a dispute about it, but according to many Medrashim and many Mefarshim, they didn't sing a song of thanks to God when they went out of Egypt. They only sang a song of thanks after Kriyas Yamsuf. Why? Because Shira has to be a spontaneous reaction to certain feelings. And so long as Egypt could still run after them, you know, slaves, they're looking at the at the, is the master going after them? We, you know, I'm not going to say who, but we had a certain Rebbe in yeshiva that boys afterwards for 2-3 years, if they would go to, after they left his class, if they would go to a movie, they would look around to see if the Rebbe was still there. So there was this fear. They just weren't at the point where they could see, they could sing, and they're explaining why. Now we're singing because not only the rider was killed, but the horse was also killed. Egypt can't come after them anymore. So, in a sense, and I have mentioned, you know, this is the problem even with the United States. Throughout, I don't know that it's any, in every war that Israel was in, the United States let Israel go up to a certain point. But they never let Israel eradicate the ability of the Arab countries. I don't mean throwing an atom bomb. I'm not talking about that. But in a sense, there was a time in Egypt when Israel could have surrounded, what was the second army, the third army of Egypt, I forgot which army, and the United States did not let them do it. In other words, sometimes it's to the benefit that the United States wanted Israel to survive. They wanted Israel to survive, but they didn't want at least that the danger should be eliminated. And I think that to a certain degree that might be because Israel would be then dependent upon the United States. So they would let Israel, you know, every time there's a terrorist attack and Israel goes in as a response to the terrorist attack. Now let's say the terrorists killed 4 people and Israel kills 6 when they go in with the army. Oh, it's proportionate. All the time you hear that. They killed more. In other words, we could let them go in and we could do the same thing exactly that they did. And you know the difference. My uncle told me that not him tell me. I read it in the notes of his something that of a share that he gave. And he said he was told by someone who knows. My uncle had connections everywhere. But he said he knows that the Sadat, before the Yom Kippur War, had a meeting with the communist leader of Yugoslavia. What was his name?
Tito.
When was it? No, not Tito. He wasn't. Tito was not a communist. Tito was Spain.
Yugoslavia.
Okay, I'm sorry. If it was someone with a C, they put him in front of a firing squad. Something okay. And Sadat told them that his plan to eventually to wage war against, that he has a plan to wage war against against Israel, and this person said, you're not going to win the war. What are you going to gain? What are you going to gain from it? He says Israel has one problem that we don't have. Israel is concerned about every Jew that dies, every individual, and all we have to do is inflict time and time again more deaths. of the individuals. And ultimately, Israel will have to give in to a certain degree.
This Loshevich.
Huh?
This Loshevich?
Well, whatever the name is. Okay, I can't pronounce it. Okay, so that he will, was it to you, maybe it was Romania, I don't remember. It might have been Romania. So different. Huh?
Sinisu,
yeah. So Sinisu, it was Romania. In other words, the idea is, by the Jewish people, each person is a big loss. That's the mentality of the Jew. Among the Arabs, they don't care. Not only they don't care, the mothers go out singing because they believe that their son, the murderer, has gone into paradise. So when Israel goes in, if four people are killed, and in the process of going in, six Arabs are killed, everything is disproportionate. And you find politicians in the United States that will make these same comments. We have, you know, if you have to kill the exact amount of the exact amount that they killed, more than that, you have no justification for it. So it's not that Israel goes in to kill. Israel goes in that they should know that there is going to be a reaction. Going to be a reaction for the murder. Sometimes when Israel goes in and does a military action, tries to destroy military equipment, they're attacked. So then Israel has to defend itself. So they do not want many of those who have positions in Washington are not interested in Israel eliminating the threats against them. They are not. There are those that would probably like to see Israel destroyed completely, but even among those who do not want Israel destroyed completely, but they want everything limited, so the threat should continue to be there. And that's why, and it's because of that situation, there's a certain tenseness. Because they know that at any moment, they could be attacked. And it's very difficult to lead a normal life with that threat hanging over your head. So, and that's why they waited up till this point to sing the Shira. But immediately afterwards, the Jewish people are the Jewish people go the Jewish people go to Mara. And the water in Mara is very bitter, and they can't drink it. So the Jewish people rebel, and the nation has claims against Moshe, so then there is a miracle, and the water becomes sweet, and then they come to Midbar Sin. And they complain that they don't. And that's where they get the mun. So they complain again, and then they rebel. And then they get the mun. And then they go to Rephidim, and there was no water there, so there also they go again, and again there's a miracle. So constant, time and time again, there are miracles. And time again, they're rebelling. How are we to understand it? How are we to understand it? I think there are three ways to understand it. For one way to understand it is that. And I've mentioned this before, that till this point, the Jewish people underwent slavery for 210 years. And they suffered bitterly. And they considered the oppressor to be not just Egypt, but they primarily considered the oppressor to be Paro, or the Paro. A matter of fact, I have mentioned many times that the Jewish people, only when the king of Egypt died, they finally cry out to God. And they can't bear the burden anymore. Up till that point, it seems from the Torah, till the king of Egypt dies, they're able to bear the burden. What happened? But the answer is that they were sure as soon as Paro dies, things will be better. They didn't see it as Egypt. But then Paro dies and there's no change. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. But in their minds, it's Paro who is enslaving them. It's not even Egypt that's enslaving them. And Paro is the leader of Egypt. And you have to understand that to a certain degree, the Jews in Egypt considered themselves like Egyptians. So Paro was not just the leader of the Egyptians, but Paro was the leader of the Jewish people in Egypt also. He was their government, so to say. And because of that, they had this bitterness, this anger that they acquired from all their years of slavery, and which they did not have an opportunity to rebel. And they turned that against the one who replaces Paro in their mind. And that's Moshe Rabbeinu. They turn it against, and it's interesting. The Medrash Tanchuma says, "Lo yochlu lishtos mayim mimara ki marim heim." They couldn't drink water from Mara because they were bitter. So the Medrash says the water was bitter, and then the Medrash says they were bitter. The Jewish people were bitter. You know, it's according to that expression, it might have been drinkable. But when a person is bitter, a person looks for an excuse to express their anger. They have a need to show their anger. And this was the one reason why the Jewish people, when a person is bitter, logic plays no role. Logic plays no role. Kina, taiva, and kavod. Kina is jealousy. Taiva is desire. Kavod is the need for recognition. That plays a big role. And what do you mean? Motzina sadam and olam, take man out of this world. What does it mean, take him out of the world? That, in a sense, he loses contact with reality. You can't reason with them. So all the logical arguments you give have no effect. So this is one reason why the Jewish people, yes, they had miracle after miracle after miracle. But they're bitter. And it's ultimately, to a certain degree, that's why the Jewish people are not able to enter Eretz Yisrael. Because sometimes the bitterness remains lifelong. So, until 40 years later, when there's a new generation, those who were below the age of 20 were able to enter Eretz Yisrael. But those that were above the age of 20 were not able, because the seeds of bitterness, they were not able, or they didn't get rid of those seeds of bitterness that were within them. That's one reason that I'll give you an example. I saw, and there's no question that Trump does not act in a proper way in terms of way he talks. And if I was looking for a son-in-law, he wouldn't be my first candidate. I'd be scared what he put on the internet about me. Anyway, so every time there was some thing. But I found it interesting. The editor of the Chicago Jewish News once one week, and he's a big fan of Clinton, you know. He one week he writes an editorial, and in the editorial he screams against Trump. Why? Because Trump didn't recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. He said in his campaign he will. He forgot to mention that all the previous presidents also said in their campaign that they will, and they lied. But no, that's a separate issue, you understand. So that's the one thing. And then, a couple weeks later, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, whatever it is, Trump recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Okay, so then he writes an editorial, how terrible it is that Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel. Anyway, I don't know what he should do. Either way, in other words, so first of all, every other president made the same promise that he made, and then when he recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So what does that mean? It means, in a sense, the person is motivated by bitterness. Listen, a person could write a reasonable article against Trump. There are faults that he has. If he would write, I could see him, people write about that they feel, whether it's my opinion or not is a separate issue, the lack of sensitivity for foreigners or whatever it is. I can understand a person writing such an article. But here, it's like a contradiction. First, he's no good because he doesn't recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And then he's no good because he does. What does it mean? It means that the man was bitter.
He hates Trump.
Whatever it is. You know, they talk about fake news. There's such a thing called stupid news. When there's someone like it's Mrs. Trump with whatever her name is, Wanda, yeah. He goes with her husband to visit the flooded areas, and she was wearing high heels. Like this is the most.
When she left. When she left.
When she left. She put her high heels on before she got on the plane, or whatever it is. So that was a big news item, that she wore high heels. And it was said in that she didn't show sensitivity to the people because she wore what she did. And I assure you, if she didn't wear high heels, it shows that she did not have respect for the people. That they didn't say because she wore high heels. But that's, there are things that you can write that are rational. But that's the idea of bitterness. Bitterness means that it doesn't make sense. And, okay, then there is another reason why. And that is that I've mentioned many times, I remember Rav Moshe Feinstein once called up my father, and he asked my father if he could ask a certain person to give a certain donation to Tver Shishalayim, Rav Moshe Feinstein's yeshiva. Moshe Feinstein asks, my father did. And the man was somewhat bitter, if I can use that word, because he had just gone through cancer and he survived. He said he's angry at God because he had cancer. My father said, but you survived. But the guy wouldn't give the money. So Moshe Feinstein called up my father and he said to my father, he wanted to know what happens. He said that a man said that he's not going to give because he had cancer and he's angry at God. So Moshe Feinstein says, he says, God gives him life every moment. Why isn't he thankful for that? Why isn't he thankful every moment? And all the brachas that we make, whether it's the Birchas HaShachar or the brachas we make on eating, in order to recognize it's something that God gives us, because it's there all the time. When something is there all the time, we take it for granted. I once, there was a person who passed away already in my shul. He had a stroke. And he came through, actually got most of his abilities back and all that. But I mentioned this, I talked with him, I said, when a person loses certain abilities, he doesn't take things for granted anymore. It's so long as it's there, and it's there every day. When it's there every day, you take it for granted. It doesn't make that much of an impression upon you. And this is the Jewish people had miracle after miracle after miracle in the desert. So at the moment of the miracle, it made a little bit of an impression on them, depending on which miracle. Okay, the splitting of the sea made a bigger impression. But right here, it was miracle after miracle after miracle. So it didn't have a lasting impression on them. Because every day they were getting mun from heaven. I mentioned Ramban's opinion is that there is no such thing as nature. Everything is miraculous. The world is recreated every moment, yesh me'ayin, out of nothing. That was the opinion of, it's hard for us to understand it, but that was the opinion of the Mekubalim. That the world, every moment, is recreated, yesh me'ayin, out of nothing. And so there's no such thing as nature. And the Rambam Shita is just the reverse. The Rambam Shita is that with the exception of Matan Torah, the Rambam is based on this week's Sedra. With the exception of Matan Torah, all miracles are part of nature. Okay, what's the idea that's part of nature? If we understand that it's programmed into nature, I've mentioned many times, So why do we daven? It's all part of nature. It's going to happen anyway. You know, my uncle said this year, I think he meant it as a joke, but some of the students wrote it over like it was serious. He said, well, Kriyas Yamsuf took place, that was part of nature, but that the Jews got there in time for Kriyas Yamsuf, that was a miracle. I sometimes tell that to the people coming late to shul. Anyway, so... Okay, but the simple answer I think is HaKadosh Baruch Hu created nature. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created nature. That if you bring all kinds of winds together and all kinds of things happen, so then you'll have splitting of the sea. These things never happen or rarely happen. But who's the one that brought these things together? Was God. So we have to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That, in a sense, Rabbi Berger mentioned to me that there's a question between the revelation at Matan Torah, at the giving of the Torah, and the revelation at Kriyas Yamsuf. Revelation at Kriyas Yamsuf was within nature. God revealed himself within nature. Of course, it was miraculous in the sense it was something that doesn't happen regularly. But Matan Torah was not within nature. Something God... the Matan Torah was outside nature. Where did the Rambam get that miracles are within nature? It's based on the Medrash Rabbah. The Medrash Rabbah says to the Pasuk Bereishis, Yukavu Hamayim L'makom Echad, let all the waters come to one place, V'seyiroah HaYabasha, and let the dry land be seen. Now, if all the waters come together, obviously the dry land is going to be seen. So why does God have to say, V'seira ha'yabasha? So he says, Tanai Hisna, God made a condition with creation that when the Jewish people need to cross the sea, it should split open. So what's the idea? The idea is, so why did they have to daven to God for it to split open? But the idea is, in other words, they daven that God is the one who keeps the laws of nature, who controls the laws of nature. That God should work on the laws of nature in such a way that you should have Kriyas Yamsuf. So in other words, really, in a sense, there's no difference between miracles. There's no difference between miracles and nature. Whether you have the opinion of the Rambam or you have the opinion of the Ramban, there are no differences. But the only difference why we say Hallel certain times and certain times we don't say Hallel, the answer is because it's in our minds. You know, it's things that regularly happen, we don't say Hallel for. We have Hallel for it. We have the Psukei de Zimbra. That's what we say before Yishtabach. That's on nature. That's on nature. But the Hallel that we say, the Hallel HaMitzri it's called, that's on the breaking of nature. We say Pesach night, it's on the breaking of nature. So whatever it is, it's God who is making us the beneficiary of nature. We owe God. We are the recipient of God's work. And every moment, He is the one who endows us with life. Reb Chaim Voloshin, the Nefesh HaChaim, he says that, what is neshama? Neshama comes from the word breath. He said, he gives an example. He says, when man blows glass, So you have the breath in the mouth, the breath in the tube, and the breath when it comes out in the glass. He says, neshama, that's the breath. It's still figuratively in the mouth of God. Ruach is going through the tube. Nefesh, it comes to a rest in the glass itself. In other words, every moment we are living because of the breath of God. Every moment we are living because of the breath of God. And nature itself is, so the question is, so why is it that we don't consider it a miracle? The reason we don't consider a miracle is because it's always there. We take it for granted. We take it for granted. This was the problem the Jewish people had in the desert. In other words, they began to take things for granted. But I think there's a third reason why the Jews, and it's based on something that I said, and that is the Torah says, Ros Hashivcha L'yam, the maidservant at the sea, saw more than Yecheskel ben Buzi, saw more revelation than the prophet Yecheskel. And the question is, so what happened to the Shivcha L'yam? What happened to her? Yecheskel, we know! We have a book in Tanakh of Yecheskel. But what happened to Yecheskel? And I think what happened to Yecheskel was what happened to the maidservant? What happened to the maidservant? As I mentioned, slaves are not able to take past, present, and future and combine them. A slave only knows the present. A slave is sold away from his parents. He doesn't have his children. His children are taken away from him. A slave only has a present. His past and future are not tied to his present. The question is, where am I getting my next meal? That's it. Because he has no... The Jewish people still had a servile perspective. A servile perspective only has the now. What happened yesterday is gone. And what's going to happen tomorrow is not here. And I don't know, and I don't even think about it. I only think about today. That's a servile perspective. And this is the servile perspective. The servile perspective, Ros Hashivcha L'yam, she saw more than Yecheskel ben Buzi, but she saw it only for one moment, for one day, whatever it was. She wasn't able to take it because they had this servile perspective, and the slave only has a present. Now, what I want to mention, I have mentioned before about Yerushalayim. I'll get more into it, but it's getting late. But about Yerushalayim and about Eretz Yisrael and all these things. Every moment, in other words, what is the argument not to recognize Yerushalayim? What is the argument not to recognize Yerushalayim as the capital of Israel? Because maybe they'll make peace. Maybe they'll make peace. We waited 70 years. We waited 70 years. Maybe they'll make peace. And it's a denial of reality. It's a denial of reality. Can somebody say, well, I forgot the... that in any other country that's an enemy of Israel, but an enemy of the United States, we don't recognize their capital. Let's say if Russia is the enemy of the United States. So let's say, okay, I don't want Moscow to be. I think Moscow should belong to White Russia. Whatever. It's the reality is, it is the capital. We deny it. So what are they saying? They're saying, look at it only from the point of view of today. Don't look at yesterday. Don't look at the past 70 years. And don't look at the future. Just today. Can't it be one more day? And we had 70 years of one more day. 70 years of one more day. How many? The life of a human being, as I mentioned. So we had 70 years of one more day. So I'm getting close to 70. Anyway, so 70 years of one more day. In other words, they want us to be used a servile perspective, to ignore the past and not to look at the future. And when we don't allow Jews to build in certain areas, I'm not saying every area, but in certain areas we just don't allow Jews to build, we're ignoring the future. And why? Because maybe they'll make peace. What have they done to indicate that they are willing to make peace? I know the sacrifices that Israel has made. Israel has created the Palestinian Authority. Israel gives them money, which they probably shouldn't. Israel does so many things. Israel has given a lot. And the Palestinians, what have they given? Even the condition to hand over terrorists, they don't do. That was part of the Camp David Accords, that the Palestinians will hand over the terrorists. They don't do that. So, okay, don't push the point today. And then there's another act of terrorism. Don't push the point today. How many todays are there? And the other point I want to make just quickly about Yerushalayim is that in the Perek Lamed Vav of Yechezkel, talked about Yechezkel, Pasuk Chaf, it's clear, it says any time Israel is degraded, that's considered a Chilul Hashem. It's profaning the name of God, because the reason is very simple. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael are one. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael are one. My father would always say, in regard to the Holocaust, he said you had people who fought the Nazis, the Warsaw Uprising. That was, in a sense, sanctification of God's name, but it was sanctification of God's name through the sanctification of the Jewish people's name. The sanctification of the Jewish people's name is a sanctification of God's name. And there are those that were just killed because they were Jewish. They didn't die in an act of fighting. That was sanctification of God's name. The sanctification of the Jewish peoples, the sanctification of God's name, and you have sanctification of God directly. When a Jew is killed, let's say during the Crusades, a Jew is killed because he doesn't give up his religion. That's direct Kiddush Hashem. That's sanctification of God's name. When a Jew is killed, that's the soldiers of Israel, when they're killed because they're fighting for the Jewish people, that's sanctification of the Jewish people's name, which is considered like sanctification of God's name. And what is true in sanctification of God's name is true about Chilul Hashem, the negation of the sanctification of God's name. So profaning God's name is when the Jewish people are disgraced. Now, why is it? It's very interesting. Look at the Christian countries. Look at the Pope. The Pope will never say a word for Israel. Never say a word for Israel when it comes to a fight. The church's standard answer was that they hope the cycle, after the terrorists take place, terrorism take place, we hope there will not be a cycle of violence. It means Israel shouldn't have a right to defend itself. What's the story? I mentioned the story with my uncle when he met the cardinal. My uncle said to the cardinal, this was before the Yom Kippur War, he said, tell me. The Pope sent the cardinal to talk to my uncle, because my uncle was against meeting with the crew, having theological meetings. He wasn't against meeting with Christians. My uncle said, my uncle was very liberal, he said, if it has to do with social issues or issues of war and peace, poverty, whatever it is, on the contrary, you could meet. You could meet. But if it has to do with theological issues, you have your religion, we have our religion. So the Pope was upset about that, so he sent this cardinal. The cardinals in the United States were not such great thinkers, so he had to send someone from, I think, Denmark or Holland, I forgot where it was. Someone was, because the ones from America, my uncle would have just, he blew this one away also. But anyway, so he had to send someone that knew something. So my uncle said to him, tell me. He started telling my uncle how much the church is in favor of the Jewish people, in favor of Israel, etc., etc. So he started talking about World War II. So my uncle said, okay, you want to deny history? Deny history. He said, but let me ask you one question. My uncle's point was the church saw itself, and in this regard, philosophically, you should know that the church is even worse than the Muslims. The Catholic Church, I'm not talking about all Christian groups, but the Catholic Church is worse than the Muslims in certain cases. Philosophically, I'm not talking about murdering today. He said, tell me, if we would like to rebuild the temple, we want to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, would the church oppose us? And the cardinal said to my uncle, halachically, can you do it? So my uncle said, that's our business, not your business. And he said, the cardinal didn't know what to answer, because what was it? When the Jews were kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, you know, at the time of the Churban, they said that was proof that God cut himself off from the Jewish people. Then in 48, the church faced another threat. The Jewish people have returned. Apparently they became God's people. They didn't have Jerusalem, so they're not God's people. And then they got, in 67, they got Jerusalem back. But no one recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. It's a denial of reality. But the purpose of the denial, what do I care if they have their embassies in Israel or they don't have their embassies, I mean Jerusalem, or they have it in Tel Aviv. They want to take a drive for an hour and a half extra. Okay. Why do I care? Because it's not a question. The real question is, don't think about the Arabs now. Think about the Catholic Church. Why is the Catholic Church so much against Israel? Because they consider themselves the new Israel. They are our replacement. And the Jewish people returning to Yerushalayim, it destroys their whole philosophy. Those Jews who side with the position that Jerusalem should not be recognized as the capital of Israel, in a sense, they're helping the Chol Hashem, because that is used as their excuse. That is their excuse that God still rejects the Jew. And that's why we have an obligation, whatever Trump's motive is war, and whatever it is, but we have an obligation to reinforce the idea that Jerusalem, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and we expect our congressmen and our senators to give support to this idea that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and this will be a glorification of the name of the Jewish people, and it will emphasize the emphasis, the connection the Jewish people have with God. And that's why the editor, I have to disagree with the editor of the Chicago Jewish News.
Thank you.
That's your cost.
Thank you.
He's a
survivor
of family.
The editor is a blooming idiot. A blooming idiot.
Yes.
We don't have that.
How is it published? His families are survivors. He doesn't have the fame for it. Send them to me, Reb. I'll take it. So, what are you doing?
Okay. All right. Whoever can help with the minion.
Yeah.
Very good. I got you.
Please
stay
for the minion.
Until we can make sure we have the.